Hello and welcome to the January podcast for the Insurance Contracts Project. My name is Andrea Pride, I'm on the ISB staff, and with me today is Sue Lloyd, an ISB member. Today we're going to discuss the ISB's discussions on insurance contracts at its January meeting when it considered the transition relief for companies that will be implementing the new insurance contract standard, having first implemented IFRS 9 on financial instruments. So looking at the first question, I guess, the issue is, why are we looking at this issue at this time?
Good question. It's unusual for us to start talking about transition-related issues before we actually finish all of the re-deliberations, but we thought that it was important to have a public debate on this sooner rather than later for a couple of reasons. Firstly, because we are getting close to finishing the insurance project, and so people are starting to wonder what the implications are. But also importantly, we have a fairly obvious disconnect happening now between the mandatory effective date of IFRS 9, which has been set as the 1st of January 2018, and the fact that it's pretty much impossible at this point, I think, to imagine a mandatory effective date that early for the insurance contract standard. So we know that people are facing the reality of a disconnect between those two dates, and we wanted to give a signal to those planning implementation, including of IFRS 9, sooner rather than later, about how these two projects might interact.
Yeah. So thanks, Sue. And there are a number of challenges, of course, that will be facing companies that issue insurance contracts. Would you fill us in a little bit of the discussion that we had about what those challenges are and which ones we are choosing to deal with at this point?
I guess the main challenges we were trying to deal with were firstly to do with the basic logistics of the fact that people who both apply financial instruments accounting under IFRS 9 and in the new insurance contracts accounting are going to be faced with two rounds of change in relatively quick succession, and they're two big rounds of change. And so we wanted to do what we could to try and facilitate that, but take into account the fact that we do think that it's important that we don't further defer the mandatory effective date of IFRS 9, because it's important that those improvements are implemented sooner rather than later, particularly because the new expected credit loss model is in IFRS 9. Also, we wanted to deal with the fact that people are uncertain about what the final details of the insurance contracts model might be, but they're already having to start to think about implementing IFRS 9. That should be sort of clarified in the near term, but still we wanted to help people as much as we could while there is still that uncertainty, even though we do expect the insurance standard to be published, we hope, well before 2018, and for the deliberations to end shortly, so people should have clarity shortly. Also, we wanted to deal with the situation where the way that people account for their financial assets with existing insurance contract accounting may change as a consequence of changes in the insurance contract accounting. So what might be the optimal combination of financial asset accounting and insurance contract accounting could change as a result of the insurance contracts project. And so we wanted to give people some clarity in terms of how we would try to help them deal with any accounting mismatches that might arise.
So what we decided was really around the areas of transition relief for these companies when they apply the new insurance contract standard. Could you perhaps give us an indication of what it was at high level, what we actually decided?
Okay. So I think of us as having done two main things. The first was to confirm some of the reliefs that were already proposed in the 2013 insurance contracts ED, and then the second was to go a little bit further in terms of reassessments around the business model. So I'll talk about each of those in turn. So firstly, in the 2013 ED, we'd already proposed that if an entity were to apply the new insurance contracts accounting and they'd already applied IFRS 9, that they'd be able to refresh some of the options that they took. And the board tentatively decided to confirm that. So the choices that were made under the fair value option in IFRS 9, and also the choices about whether or not equity investments would be measured at through OCI would be refreshed, and so the board confirmed that. But what the board discussed that was new was going a further step, and that was to to consider whether it would be appropriate for entities to reconsider their business model that was used to classify financial assets when they applied IFRS 9. We hadn't proposed that before, and that was the main part of the board's discussion. And the board thought that it would be appropriate for us to have a further discussion about a reconsideration of business model by people applying the insurance contracts standards subsequent to applying IFRS 9. It was an important discussion and quite a controversial one for the board, because the important thing is that the business model is an objective, observable facts and circumstances based assessment. So we're not saying you get to choose what your business model is, rather you get to look at your facts and circumstances and make a sort of fact-based assessment of what your business model is. But what we did acknowledge in the discussions was that things can change. So you could have a situation where, based on facts and circumstances, when you first applied IFRS 9, you came to a conclusion about a particular business model for your assets. So, for example, that they might be in a hold to collect amortized cost business model. But by the time that you come to apply the insurance contract standard, based on facts and circumstances at that point in time, you may come to a different conclusion. And the board was acknowledging that that may well be the case. Often we wouldn't expect it to be the case, but it was possible. And that was what we wanted to allow for, because we don't want unnecessary accounting mismatches to arise or business models to be inappropriately reflected in financial statements. What we were very careful to talk about was the fact that it was a reassessment of business model. We're not talking about a reclassification of business model using the IFRS 9 criteria, which set a very high hurdle. For reclassifications, we're talking about people freshly applying the business model assessment in IFRS 9, which is a lower hurdle. So the board tentatively decided that we thought that it would be a good idea to introduce that concept as part of the transition relief in the insurance contract standard. But it's not going to be the end of the discussion. A lot of the detail was left open, and what the board basically agreed was to get the staff to investigate it further and to bring back more detailed papers later in the re-deliberations to look at some of the specifics, such as whether entities would be permitted or required to make the reassessment of their business model, and what the scope would be. Would it be applied to whole entities, only to assets backing insurance contracts? How would we scope it? Which are important questions that we'll look at a later date.
So the initial feedback that I've heard on this discussion has been broadly favourable. People welcome the fact that we're thinking about this. But there is a lot of discussion about why the ISB doesn't just defer IFRS 9 for companies that are going to be issuing insurance contracts anyway, and let them apply IFRS 9 only once when insurance contract standard comes in. This was something we had quite a long discussion with on at the board meeting itself, and I think it'd be helpful if you could outline for us some of the things that came up in that discussion.
Yeah, it's a tricky question, and it's a sort of, for me, a little bit of a seductive question, because it sounds very appealing on the face of it, and it sounds like an obvious and easy thing to do, but as is often the case, the devil's in the detail. And I think the first thing that we stumble across is the fact that we're not writing a standard for insurance companies, but a standard for insurance contracts. And that means that that standard isn't just going to affect, you know, companies that people might naturally think of as insurance companies or companies that are regulated as insurance companies, but it affects a broad range of companies. It could affect banks, you know, even people in the motor industry were used as examples in the board discussion, so it's got a big effect on conglomerates. And that leads to the second question, which is, what do you do if you've got, say, a bank with an insurance subsidiary? If most of the insurance contracts are written in the insurance subsidiary, would it be appropriate to have different accounting on financial instruments applying for different parts of the same entity? So let's imagine a bank with IFRS 9 potentially applied to its banking part of the business, and then IAS 39 still being applied to the insurance part of the business. And what would we do in the consolidated financial statements, and how easy would it be for a user of financial statements to digest a set of financial statements that combine two very different accounting models, particularly when you come to expected losses? And another discussion has been about, well, okay, we're very focused on getting impairment to work or to get that in place on a timely basis, but maybe classification and measurement isn't so time critical. And that's probably a fair comment on the face of it. But again, the challenge we have there is how integrated we've made IFRS 9. It's been very much designed for the classification and measurement model to sit with the impairment requirements and to sit with the hedge accounting requirements as well. And so if you start to pick that apart, it has big effects. If you think just about the implementation of the impairment requirements, which, you know, are also a big undertaking for entities, having a situation where the expected credit loss model might apply to different assets depending on whether you're applying IAS 39 or IFRS 9 would have big implications if you start to try and unpick that accounting. So even though, it, as I said, it sort of sounds good on the surface, I think the devil is in the detail.
And I think those challenges were enough for the board to be fairly firm in its initial thoughts and conclusions at the meeting that it didn't seem to be an avenue that they wanted to pursue any further. So in terms of next steps, Sue, as you've been quite clear, the decisions at the January meeting were largely a statement of the direction that the ISB wanted the staff to take. And we will, of course, be revisiting all of this in the context of transition as a whole to tie up some of the details. You mentioned permitted require is an important one, but there's also things like what disclosures would be required around this transition relief. Looking at the project on a wider context, we still have to make decisions on the enduringly tricky topic of the profit recognition for participating contracts and what you do with the contractual service margin there. And we expect to resume those discussions in the February meeting. So until then, thanks for listening to this podcast, and we will be issuing another podcast at the end of the February meeting. Thank you.